Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Soraya. How's it going?
All right. Hi, this is Soraya.
And this is Jeff.
Our podcast is called Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme.
A podcast where the two of us play music that we like and share anecdotes and background about the tunes.
We hope you'll join our conversation. And without further ado, agrubiar.
Let's get groovy. Are you ready to talk about the Long Riders Psychedelic Country Soul album?
I'm really ready to talk to Tom Stevens and talk about this new release.
Yes, so we've had it for a week or two now. How have you been enjoying it?
I really like it a lot.
Well, this is going to be great talking to Tom about it after we've had a chance to listen to it. We talked to Greg, of course, before the album came out, and we'd only heard a couple songs then. But now that we've had a chance to listen to it, let's give Tom a call and pick his brain a little bit.
I'd love it.
Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
This is Jeff and Soraya.
Hello.
Thank you for taking our call today.
Yes, thank you for calling. I'm here.
Well, for our listeners who are checking in, joining us today is longtime Long Riders bassist and vocalist Tom Stevens to discuss the latest Long Riders release, Psychedelic Country Soul, which was released on February the 15th. On Omnivore Recordings in the U.S. and Cherry Red Records in the U.K. We're going to be discussing some of the recent Long Rider reissues, Psychedelic Country Soul, as well as talking about his solo releases. Tom, we want to welcome you warmly to Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me. I really like the podcast.
Oh,
thanks so much.
My heart is so warmed.
Absolutely. Tom, you've been high on our list of people we'd love to sit and talk with. So this is just a real joy to sit and talk with you today and pick your brain a little.
Yes.
It's great.
So when we first started the podcast, of course, you were one of the people that we wanted to talk to right off the bat. And we were trying to plan when we could have you on the show. But when we heard news that the Long Riders were going to put out a new album in February, we decided to try to plan this as strategically as possible, have Greg come on before the album, and then have you come on the show after we had a chance to listen to it. So now that we've had a chance, we wanted to pick your brain a little bit about it. And we wanted to ask you if you could tell us and our listeners what your personal feelings were getting back together with the Long Riders to record a studio album, which you hadn't done in 32 years since Two Fisted Tales. How was that for you personally, getting back together in the studio?
The actual act of getting back in the studio was surprisingly comfortable and actually a lot of fun. kind of a deja vu feeling, actually, and it was actually better in a lot of ways, as has been touring and some other things that we did have done recently have been better now than they were back in the 80s. And I felt we were a lot more comfortable, better exchanges of ideas, etc. But when the album was first proposed, we had visited Larry Chapman's studio that he co-owns with Dr. Dre when we were in Los Angeles playing the Roxy and a festival there in Indio, California called Stagecoach, as well as, I believe, a San Francisco gig, etc. And, hey, guys, let's go check out the studio. And it's like, okay, you know, sounds like fun. Nice, impressive studios. Good to see Larry Chapman again. He's an old friend. As you know, he worked with the Long Riders in the 80s. And, you know, maybe we'll record here sometime. It's like, okay, that sounds cool. You know, it was kind of surreal when they had mentioned it, and I wasn't sure how we were going to pull it off, to be honest. And then maybe I'm not sure. It was a few months before we actually went in the studio. We got the call where, okay, we're going to make a new album. Let's start submitting our material. So you got, this is the first time in a little over 30 years.
Wow.
And I had some tunes that I had in various, right now the way I write is more of an assembly line deal where I have, a part here. I have the headlights over there. I have the exhaust pipe over there. I have the pistons over here. And we'll see what parts fit in to make a really cool looking or sounding car in this case. So I had a lot of that kind of thing. So I just started sending in songs as everybody else did, which is a very interesting process. That's pretty much the way it happened. And as I said, the whole process seemed surreal, and actually going into the studio was where it got real and actually got a lot more comfortable, because there were little, you know, how are we going to pull this off? We haven't done this for a while. You know, how the song's going to fit. Everything fit really well. Ed Stasium, our producer, made us feel very comfortable. He got the best sounds and the best takes out of us, as he was always able to do. This one, Versus Two Fisted Tails, which he had also produced, Ed Stasium had also produced. That thing, we did it. I mean, it took me about a week just to do the bass parts.
Ooh. Wow.
Over and over. Okay, you missed a note. Over and over. Okay, that's perfect now. This time it was like we did three takes all together. I mean, we sang the vocals afterward, did some lead guitar playing afterward, did a little bit of layering, but there's a lot of live in the studio in this album. In fact, it's pretty much like Native Sons in that category, and to an extent State of Our Union too, where we were more live in the studio. But Ed's just a master of getting our best sounds. He's a great guy. He, you know, he's personable. He gets along with everybody. He respects the band. We respect his work. So, you know, it's great. Big love fest, you know.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because when we spoke with Greg Souders, he said, this album is like a love letter to each other. And we really like that idea. And as we started hearing, you know, first we heard Greenbill, and the lyrics are so poignant. And definitely these songs all sound really, really personal. And so we wanted to ask you about Let It Fly. I mean, we on a previous episode, when we spoke with Greg Souders, we listened to and played the first single, Greenville. And we also heard Molly Somebody. But we want to ask you about Let It Fly. And this is one of a couple of songs that you wrote that they just seem really personal. And I want to just quote a little bit of the lyrics. Flying way up high just makes it harder to fall down. I always hoped she'd be there, but she's not around. She said, make a wish and let it fly.
Summer slipped away, autumn falling. Blue jay in the distance keeps on calling. It harder to fall down. I always hoped she'd be there, but she's not around. She said, make a wish and let it fly. And make a wish and let it fly.
And those lyrics really struck a chord in both Jeff and I. And we wanted to ask you, is there anything you'd like to share about either writing this song, or is there anything about this song that that you'd like to share with our listeners? It's just a fantastic song.
Well, thank you. I wish I could say everything came all at once or some kind of pretty story about it. One very interesting thing, I had the music already. In fact, it was on a demo a little while ago, just the music. And I'm sitting writing lyrics. I'm looking through old lyrics. Nothing's really working. And this happens sometimes. So sometimes I use little tools to come up with, to break through whatever kinds of blocks come up. In this case, it was a tarot card.
Wow.
And lo and behold, if you know anything about tarot too, it was a death card, right side up. And if you know anything about tarot, which is a great little divination tool to make decisions. I mean, people use it for their uses, and I respect whatever anybody, you know, uses it for. In this case, it was basically, to me, a rebirth of a relationship that seems to have, anybody in a long-term relationship has gone through, as we go through in life, just times when things just don't work out. And a lot of times it's just you're going through rebirth, you're going through some kind of change, you're going through some kind of a period in time that winds up being for the better for, in the case of a relationship, for both people, as you will only know looking back. So looking back upon a relationship is the context of that death card in rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about, I use the bird, because I'm sitting up in my studio and I have a little field in the back, and I actually had a blue jay in the background.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, there's a lyric right there. And, you know, and just take it from there.
Wow. That's a great story, Tom. Thank you for sharing that with us. I know it's difficult sometimes to try to pin down what exactly lyrics mean, because a lot of times it means different things to the listener. So we appreciate that background behind that song. We did want to ask you further about this song, in that Debbie and Vicki Peterson join in on backing vocals. Could you tell us whose idea it was to bring them in to sing backing vocals, and how you felt about them singing on your song?
Well, Sid originally asked me, as we were reviewing each other's songs, he was saying, okay, guests, what guests do we want? And the first people that came to mind to me were Debbie and Vicki, just because of our past relationship. They're great people, and everything they do just adds texture and beauty to the music, but edge as well. And they're just fantastic to work with. Sid is kind of semi-famous now. If you weren't aware, Sid and Debbie lived together platonically for years. They shared a house with a guy we used for sound and road crew detail and everything, Joe Stella. He was in there. Even Eric Burden stayed in that house for a little bit.
Wow.
That's a story in itself.
Wow.
Yeah, house on Norton in Hollywood. I stayed on the couch many a night over there as well. But yeah, Debbie lived there for quite a while. So it was not only great to see them, but I remember, you know, it's like, Tom, why don't you go in the studio, work out what you want to do with vocals. And I'll tell you, I've never really felt like a vocalist between, you know, you and the listeners. I impersonate one. Fake until you make it, right? Yeah. So I'm so here I am, acoustic guitar, my song, and there's Debbie and Vicky, and it's like, okay, I'm not gonna show that I'm intimidated, I'm not gonna show any of that kind of thing.
How did you do that?
And yeah, you just do it, you know. You just, okay, first chord, you know, first lyrics and everything. And they're almost playful with the way they were going about. I think they sang along with each other to the demo tape in the car, because they had a little bit down, but you could tell they were playing with the different harmonies. They don't just do going a third up, going a fifth up, whatever the standard of, you know, harmony singing. They will play around, do counter melodies, land on a part, and then perfect it. And this is all within seconds. And just being in the same room with that process, with those beautiful voices, is just fantastic, let alone them being old friends.
I just love that, Tom, for us, it doesn't, if you say you're impersonating a vocalist, boy, hats off. You're doing a great job. Because it really just, your vocals are so heartfelt.
Well, thank you. That's probably compensating for, it's just getting over, when I was a kid, I would try to sing, and there were all these other people that were, you know, chosen over me, or for whatever reason, I felt like I wasn't quite the vocalist, but, I was kind of thrust into it because, okay, I've got to do it myself. Okay, I'll do it myself, you know.
Right. Well, we enjoy it.
Yes.
So just know we appreciate you as a vocalist as well as a writer. And speaking of that, I want to piggyback on that and talk about the fourth track on the album. It's a song that you co-wrote with Sid, All Aboard.
Get the Sultan's cockpit ready. We're going for a ride higher than the mountains with my best friends at my side. We're slaving at the cool face, rub the lamp and climb aboard. See the stars in highest heaven, that's what we are shooting.
How that collaboration worked, because I know you're in the U.S., you're on the East Coast, and Sid's in the U.K. So how did that collaboration work to compose the song?
Well, that was one of the songs I had top to bottom finished instrumentally. I had a tape of. In fact, that was one where I just set up a little foot track in my studio, got out my Stratocaster, and basically I started it, as memory serves, I started it and played it top to bottom, and that's exactly the song structure and everything you hear on the record. I played guitar on the record. In fact, Stephen McCarthy plays bass on that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I had that demo. It's instrumental, and I've written Let It Fly. And can I think of some lyrics for this? And Sid, that very same day, writes me an email. Hey, you got any songs to finish? Like, okay, Sid. here's this song, and here's another song. And he finishes both of them, which we'll get to in a minute, that mystery second song. But yeah, he finished it. He came up... He sent me an acoustic guitar demo where he's playing the exact same chord progression, and singing his melody and words. And it's like, Sid, this is great. Now, Slay the Dragon, he said, oh, come on, let me have Slay the Dragon. Okay, sure. I was just messing with him anyway.
That's funny. So, Tom, you mentioned that you played your Stratocaster, and we know that you played lead on the song. Do you prefer to play guitar or bass?
Well, when I write songs, I usually play guitar.
Oh.
Very rarely have I written songs that start with bass. They usually start with guitar. On stage, I played bass so much more than I play guitar that I'm more comfortable playing bass. And they're two different instruments. So I started playing guitar when I was six, 7 years old. Started lessons when I was seven. But growing up in Indiana, in the fifth grade, they started me out on a big string bass. And it got to the point where in high school, I had orchestra for first hour. So I'm ringing these tones out of these rather junky, not very good shape string basses, but it was great practice because I remember the first time I picked up a bass guitar, this is easy compared to these planks with telephone wires on them that comprised a string bass in school. Bass guitar in comparison, just really easy. So and I love interfacing with drums too. I've always been fascinated by drums, although I don't play them very well.
What about if we, I want to talk about What the Eagle Sees, another song that you co-wrote with Sid.
Yes.
Was the writing process similar to what you mentioned for All Aboard? I mention that this is another one where you play lead guitar, which we're assuming is the slide guitar part?
Yeah, the slide guitar, and I also kind of beefed up I played the rhythm guitar. Like the first guitar you hear, the da-da-da-da part is me.
An eagle smile above the blue isle. What does she see? So high and free. Green turning brown, she slows back down. See, see what the eagle sees, a burning sky in front of me. See, see what the eagle sees, a burning sky from sea to sea. She's thinking of all the ones she loves, all the ones, all the ones, all the ones she loves.
As far as I
just have a different style from Steve, and I have a different style from Sid. They both have distinctive, great styles, and I'm just happy I was able to add mine in too. To answer your question, very similar. I had the song on tape. Sid actually wrote the. She's thinking of all the ones she loved, not only the words, but he added that music. He added that bridge. I went to B minor and A, and then went back to that E riff, E and A riff, if you know what I mean.
So you guys almost did like a Lennon McCartney kind of thing on this one, sounds like. in that he came in with the bridge, much like Lennon would do with McCartney. That's very cool.
Yes, this was, this is, by the way, the first time that I collaborated with Sid in songwriting. I had collaborated early on with Steven on Wreck the 809 on Native Sons. From there, we didn't do a whole lot of collaboration, a little bit, but I was mainly writing my own songs until this album.
Wow. So What the Eagle Sees was the first collaboration with Sid?
I think it was actually All Aboard, and then we did What the Eagle Sees, but it was probably within the same week or two.
Wow. Wow.
We knew we had to churn out a lot of songs in a very brief time period. So we took all of them that we thought had any, you know, had any long riders to them whatsoever and put them in there.
Wow. Wow. Well, I think you guys did an awesome job. We did.
Thank you.
So we've been talking about some of the originals on this album. There's one cover version, and you guys tackled Tom Petty's "Walls." If I'm not mistaken, that's you singing the lead on the song.
Yeah, it's a duet between Steven and I.
Oh wow.
Oh, neat.
So how was it for you singing one of Petty's songs, seeing that he, you know, passed away, you know, not too long ago? How was it tackling the song?
Oh, it's great. It's a great song.
Some days are diamonds. Some days are rocks. Some doors are open. Some roads are locked. Sundowns are golden. Then fade away. But if I never do nothing, I'll get you back someday. Cause you've got a heart so big that it can crush this town. I can't hold out forever, even walls fall down.
The last time that we were in the studio, we were recording Two Fisted Tales at A&M Studios about the same time that Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were doing some work on, I believe it was the Let Me Up, I've Had Enough. I'm trying to remember the name of the album. It would have been 1986, late 86.
Wow.
And basically, I would burst out of the studio, have a cigarette or something like that. I smoked back then. And, hey, Tom Petty would be out. He probably also wanted to clear his head of hearing the same songs and play back over and over.
Yeah.
So we just stand around and, you know, shoot the breeze about whatever, you know.
Wow.
Talk about guitars, talk about, he had some funny Neil Young stories, for example. he's one of us, you know. He's a great guy. Mike Campbell would also pop around. Stan Lynch was a great guy. He was still in the band at that time. Those three were the main guys that were hanging out at A&M when we were doing Two Fisted Tales. I remember one of my songs, 17 Ways, they were doing a playback, and I'd heard enough and walked out, probably for a smoke or whatever, running to Mike Campbell, and he looked at me and says, "Hey, man, is it 2 12-string guitars or 3 or what is that?" I said, "No, it's just 1.
Wow.
I just remember that about Mike.
Wow.
Yeah, they were just regular guys who were just doing the same thing in the same studio and just talking about the process. We're not talking about the process, talking about baseball or whatever.
Wow. So that makes the inclusion of this Tom Petty song even that more personal, in that you guys had that personal interaction while you were recording.
Yes, exactly. And that was the last time that we'd recorded together. And we get back, and there's those memories of Tom, and also Debbie and Vicky had worked with Tom Petty recently on a Music Cares Benefit live show.
Oh, that's right.
So they had some recent stories of Tom. Yeah. So we were talking, Tom came up, in our conversation with them when they were hanging out with us when we were recording Let It Fly, and also when they sang on Walls.
Wow.
That is just, I got chills listening to that. I mean, it's just a really cool story. You know, there's another song, Tom, that Jeff and I have latched onto, and especially certain lyrics, and that's Bells of August. Curiously, it's another song that you play lead guitar on. But we wanted to ask a little something about the content and the inspiration. And I do want to quote just a couple of lyrics. And so you sing in the song, "Neighbor gets his views from cheap TV news, words to keep us all apart. Mother just wants her son back home again to heal her broken heart. And they cannot hear what they will not hear." And then a little later on, "Who will tell the mother and father the news from very far away? After years of wait and worry, the child is coming home today. Once they fought for the illusion, many grudges from the past. Now they're looking to the future. The child is coming home at last. Who will hear the bells of August? Who will answer the call? When will people know the answer is not to answer them at all?"
Neighbor gets his views from cheap TV news. Words to keep us all apart. Mother just wants her son back home again to heal a broken heart. And they cannot hear what they will not hear. Sweet cinnamon in the air. And they cannot hear what they will not hear. Sweet cinnamon in the air. Very far away. After years of waiting and worry, the child is coming home today. Once they fought for the illusion, many grudges from the past. Now they're looking toward the future. The child is coming home at last. So who will hear the bells of August? Answer to their call. When will people know the answer is not to answer them at all? When they cannot hear what they will not hear. Sweet cinnamon.
This song is just really, it's moving. And we wanted to ask a little about the inspiration behind this song, writing this song.
It was an answer to what has been happening in America recently. It's been going on for a long time, but it's especially in the news, in the media. The media is making a lot of money on coverage of conflict that we have within our own families, within old friends that suddenly latch on to some things. What really made me write that song was the Charlottesville incident, the car attack. It's just a very sad thing. I don't have solutions. I'm not a politician. But there's certain age-old things. I mean, I wrote, for example, the Two-Fisted Tail song. The Charlottesville thing. Sorry, I'm getting a little misty here, and
no.
I'm forgetting my own song titles. I wrote basically an anti-war song, or whatever you want to call it, on Two-Fisted Tales. That the whole war thing. I mean, I'm old enough, folks, to have had a draft number in 1974.
Wow.
I was looking at going to Vietnam.
Wow.
And I have friends. I have one friend here locally who lost an older brother. He was drafted, and within just a few months, he stepped on a landmine and was blown to pieces.
Wow.
In Vietnam.
That's terrible.
You know, we can have our differing opinions, but I don't think anybody wants war, either in another country or at our own dinner tables over Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I think there are people that have an interest in keeping us apart, that, and that's kind of what the song is about, you know, that the conflict, it doesn't provide any answers. I wish I had answers. I wish there were answers within the song, but, I wanted to say something about it. It was too important not to say something about it. A Stitch in Time is the song that I had written on Two-Fisted Tales.
Oh, okay.
That had the sort of impatience with war and the 80s, yuppies, being in favor of war and that whole thing. I don't want to get real political. But this is a thing that affects really everybody in the world when we live under governments that may not represent us, you know?
Yeah. Well, I will say in this song in particular, Tom, with Bells of August, that you did a really good job of addressing the subject of personal worry and loss and that kind of thing, and bringing that situation into the home, you know, with the mother and the father. And you did a beautiful job of doing that.
Thank you. And those are the people that we need to listen to the most, are the mothers and fathers of these people. Again, I was talking about Thanksgiving tables, where it affects family. Same kind of thing. There could be war with guns. It could be war with words. But there's a lot of conflict going on right now. And when you want to look at the news about it, it seems like they have an interest in perpetuating it as opposed to stopping it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bringing us together.
That helps their business model, I would say.
Yeah, it's making them money.
Well, on a lighter note, but still talking about Bells of August, I wanted to mention that the tone on the lead guitar part, that tone is amazing. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
that tone.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds.
Ed came out and said, "What's the deal on that, Tom?" I think he was expecting, you know, plug into a Marshall and, you know, rock out a little bit. I had very generous gentleman lent us his 1960. It was a Fender, for all the geeks out there, Fender Deluxe Tweed, which is an old circuitry that has a unique sound to it. And I was playing one of Stephen McCarthy's Telecasters, and I had the tone rolled all the way off.
Wow.
So for all the guitar geeks out there, I had also, in the demo, I had also done a little bit more intricate of a guitar lead with through a fuzz, and chose not to use that. I tended to keep it just clean and long rider-ish, but yet something distinct, something with character. And I knew, I felt confident that Ed Stasium would be the guy to capture it. Yeah. And once he heard it, within the context of the song, he liked it too, so...
Yeah, that part really stands out on the entire album to me. That's that lead, that tone on that lead is just beautiful. Love it.
Yeah, I wanted it to approach a human voice. It's an emotional tone.
It really
That's
is.
That's what I was looking for anyway.
You guys captured it for sure.
100%.
So we did want to talk about the upcoming tour. So the band is going to be touring in support of the album, and you guys are playing several dates throughout Europe, taking you through almost the entire month of April. And for our listeners, those tour dates are available on the band's website, which is thelongriders.com. So thelongriders.com. You can find the tour dates. If you're in Europe, and you guys may have a chance to see the band. I will happen to be in Italy the same time that you guys are, Tom, so I'm going to try to see if we can squeeze in a show while we're in Italy, so that would be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
So we're actually looking forward to an announcement of U.S. dates. When we talked to Greg, it sounded like there could be something coming up in the fall. Is it too early for any kind of announcement for U.S. dates?
Yeah, definitely too early. There have been some possible dates coming up, some possible cities, but nothing is booked. So I don't want to jump the gun and say, yeah, we're going to play America in September or whatever. You know, it could happen, and we're hoping it does.
Yes.
And we're hoping it's where the most people that want to see us can see us.
Nice.
So just stay posted to the website.
Exactly. There will definitely be more tour dates posted very soon. There's if the emails are true, there are definitely more dates coming up after this April tour.
Nice. So Tom, are you looking forward to the European dates?
Oh yeah. I love playing live. I love touring. It's just something that I feel really lucky to still be able to do. I talk to people that just they're local musicians or regional musicians, and how can you do all these dates in a row? And I add plus, and we do a lot of interviews, a lot of press, and have to rehearse. We want to try a new song, so we, you know, sit around and sound check or whatever. There's a lot more than just playing the shows, but somehow energy, all that other thing just comes naturally. It's a perpetual motion kind of thing, and we all love to do it. So, and so far, we're all getting along great. We haven't changed much. But we like that. It's familiar territory, you know. And you know, we get along just fine. There's just enough tension in the band to actually propel that perpetual motion. And it's a positive thing. I think it's helped us a lot more than it's hurt us, especially now that we're older and more mature.
Neat. I like that. I like that. Enough tension to propel forward. Tom, we wanted to switch gears a little bit and ask you about some of the recent reissues. And we want to start with Final Wild Songs, which was released on Cherry Red Records in 2016. The box set is a collection of most of your studio recordings, as well as some demos and a 1985 live performance. And we understand that you played a key role in bringing this to fruition as the project curator. Could you talk to us and our listeners about the process of putting this together?
Yeah, the process was, there was one person who wrote one of the songs on one of the albums that had asked to leave off that song. And I was talking to another band member. I said, okay, this, I know we're going to get flack over this, but it's kind of like when Lennon did Two Virgins. We have to support him whether we agree with the decision or not. The other songs, I just wanted to make sure, like, for example, there's a very good Native Sunset on Prima Records, Sid's label in the UK, that I also curated, that has a lot of the standard Native Sons era songs. So I wanted to come up with some extras, like, for example, some acoustic songs that we did at McCabe's. Mm-hmm. We did a few of those shows in 1984, never to repeat them. We never took that particular flavor of our act out on the road. Or that set of songs. So I wanted to make sure that was included. I wanted to make sure there was a Sir Doug song, and we had a really good sounding version of The Rains Came from CBGB's when it was open back in 84. So that was a shoe in. There were a lot of, I'm the guy who was, I always collected other people's bootlegs, even when I was a teenager. So when we started touring and we actually had soundboards and I'd see cassette decks, or later on when we do FM shows, I would go to the FM truck that was parked out back and said, hey, can I have a tape of this after you're done? You know, after the show's done. Oh yeah, sure. And I'd hang out and shoot the breeze with them for a little bit and come back after the show. And sure enough, I would have a really nice sounding live recording of the Long Riders. So over the years, I just kept them. And luckily, most of them survived all my moves over the years. And Sid says, okay, what do you have? And okay, I've got quite a bit. And here it is, you know. In fact, I kept asking Sid, what do you think? Do you think another song would be more appropriate here or whatever? He said, ah, you know, I'd rather have... He left me in charge of that box. So if there are, you know, problems with the extras or whatever, you can ask me about them.
Well, I'm curious, Tom. You mentioned that a band member had asked that a song be left off of Final Wild Songs. Are you referring to Still Get By?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, my bandmate, Tony...
You heard it here directly addressed, I think, first.
Yeah,
we've been skating around that issue for quite a while. I still... It's still a big mystery. Why? I have no idea, and one could speculate all day about it. I have no idea why.
Wow, it's such a great song. It has such a garagey feel to it. My bandmate Tori Troutman was the one that pointed it out to me. He goes, you do realize that Still Get By is missing from that. And I was like, oh, it is. Why is that? It's such a great song.
Hey!
but just a little girl. She's not too cool, right out of school. Power, nothing needed, and she said it was the truth. Hanging with the crowd, she's seen going up and down. As the story goes, she still gets close from the loss of power.
And so it was originally.
I know. I had said to Sid, this is a tragedy, you know. Kim Shattuck from the Muppets once told me that that was one of the songs that she first learned when she was first learning how to play guitar.
Yeah, that's
like, oh, wow.
That's the same for me, too. Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the first songs I learned to play on guitar. So,
I think I've been using my influence, and we've been using our influence to try to get it back in the live set. And we've been playing it since the box set came out as well, just every once in a while. So.
Wow.
So I guess the powers that be are warming up to it.
But you did have to honor the request not to put the song on the compilation, correct?
Yeah. Although somebody in another band just said, look, Tom, next time just say, oh, yeah, we'll leave it off and then put it on.
Ask for forgiveness later, right? Wow.
So who's right? You know, I don't know. And I can't. It's too late to fix it now. But I guess we'll have to wait for the next box. But,
you know, if you must, give us another one. Thank you. You know, Tom, we wanted to also ask about the reissues of State of Our Union and Two Fisted Tales. Both were released as three CD box sets in November of 2018. Both are filled with demos, live performances, and as with Final Wild Songs, you were part of compiling all of this material for these releases. And so has the process just been similar for all of these different collections that you've been curating? Or was it a little different?
Yeah, in the case of these two most recent Cherry Red boxes, there was pretty much, speaking of momentum, there was a lot of apparently decent sales or something. Final Wild Songs box set did very well, apparently, and Cherry Red wanted more. I remember I had mentioned the tour that we did in California where we played the Roxy and we played Stagecoach. Well, it was a Saturday morning where we got together with a couple of the Cherry Red guys, Sid and I. Met at Ray's in Santa Monica, had breakfast and talked about it. I said, yeah, we've got, you know, they mentioned, well, what would you like to do? What would you like to have out? And I said that I would like to have the full set of demos for State of Our Union and for Two Fisted Tales because they tell a tale that's a little different from the release versions. And also a representative, you know, period live show from both of those eras, from State of Our Union era, from Two Fisted Tales era. And he said, okay, that's three CDs each. And he writes it down. I write it down. And, case closed. And it took a couple of years for him to come out. And it's the kind of thing, box sets, I've noticed when working with labels, and this is no slight or anything, it just takes time. And it's a hurry up and wait kind of thing where you'll have everything together and you'll listen to all these tapes and you know, make inquiries. Luckily, we found reel-to-reel masters on everything, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
On the demos, etc., which is pretty amazing, actually.
Wow.
There are jokes where, you know, people should start their own agencies to look for masters, because even masters for albums that have come out through the decades just get lost.
Yeah.
Right. Let alone live material. The live show, for example, it came out along with the State of Our Union box. I knew it was taped. We all knew it was taped. That Encore from Hell was on a Fluxy disc many years ago. So we knew it was recorded, and we figured it wasn't just, you know, they recorded that and shut the, you know, reel-to-reel recorder. But we didn't think anything of it because we couldn't find it. And they were looking around for another show that was on a list, which we never found, and found the reels for that Encore from Hell show, the Mean Fiddler show. And listened to it. It's like, this is great. Let's put this one out. So we got lucky.
Nice.
Excellent.
That's great that you had that original source material to work with.
Yeah,
I've heard horror stories about bands going back and they actually have to buy CDs to master reissues. Yes. So I'm glad that you had source material. Hey, Tom, if you don't mind, we wanted to ask you briefly about your solo material. You've released several CDs, full-length CDs, as well as a few EPs dating as far back as 1982 for your first solo debut release. That was Points of View. And the most recent release that we're aware of is the 2009 EP Sooner.
The sun is falling, full moon is climbing up above the clouds, just to see you alone again. Now I feel passing through my mind, Black Beauty, can I see you? The summer's gone, the leaves are bleeding red upon the ground. Now I feel you passing through my mind, Black Beauty, can I see you sometime? Like a goddess flashing in the sky, Black Beauty, can I see you sometime? Feel you passing through my mind, can I see you sometime? Like a goddess flashing in the sky. Black beauty, can I see you?
Personally, I think is a masterpiece, and it's kind of cool for us that the cover features a piece that was created by our first guest, Lena Latonwa. So that,
yes,
that's pretty cool. We wanted to ask you what the process is like recording solo material versus recording with a band such as the Long Riders.
The solo material, I don't have anyone to bounce ideas off of. On the other hand, you know, that could be considered a negative. On the other hand, I don't have other people saying, play it this way, play it that way. I can pretty much get recorded exactly what I have in my head or pretty close to it. Or if it sounds different, a lot of times it sounds better than what I had expected, what I had heard in my head. And it's a more leisurely process. I have a very small personal studio upstairs in my home. And that's where I did Sooner and the CD previous called Home. I just go upstairs when I have ideas. Sometimes I don't even have ideas. Sometimes I just pick up a guitar and start playing, kind of like when I wrote the music to What the Eagle Sees. And several songs have come out like that. There's a song on Sooner, the How Do We Feel What's Real, which is an old Long Riders, well, a song that I had submitted for Two Fisted Tales, and that is a Long Riders demo that didn't make it to the album, but there were a lot of songs that didn't make it to the album written by everybody. So we had 20 songs going in.
Wow.
And I think we had 11 that we actually finished and released. But that was a good one, and I wanted to make sure it was on a solo CD.
You know, Tom, after our listeners hear, especially about solo recordings, they want to go out and get it. And can you give us and give our listeners a little information about where they can find your solo recordings? Are all of them available, and through what venues? Download or purchase the CDs, or where can they find them?
Well, everything is available digitally through downloading. The older ones are out of print, like Points of View. That was a 1982 vinyl EP that came out when I was just a baby. Jack Watterson produced, he was Green on Red, he produced Another Room that was out in 95. That one's out of print, so that's an eBay or Discogs kind of thing. But if nothing else, you can go to my website at tomstevens.org. It's kind of old. I need to update that thing. But you'll be able to at least see what's available and or contact me through my email, which, by the way, is tom@tomstevens.org. And if you want to order any of those albums, I won't have vinyl. I may not have pressed CDs, but a lot of times what I'll do when I get requests, which I do get still, I will burn them a copy on CD. I don't charge much, and I autograph the CD. So it's, you know, something personalized.
Nice.
I could probably, if I was rolling in the dough, I would probably have 1,000 of each, each solo album that I've done sitting in here in one of my rooms in my house or whatever.
It's just good to know that we can still get it and that our listeners too. That's the important part.
Yeah. If you're in a hurry, you can download them. If you want hard copies, just get in touch with me.
Yeah. Perfect. So we have the digital version. So Soraya, we're going to have to be contacting Tom and getting these personalized CD versions.
Yes.
Great.
So Tom, we've learned that you've recorded a bunch of music, your solo material, you've recorded with the Long Riders. We didn't even mention your band in the 70s, Magi, who put out an album, or all the other sessions that you've worked with on stuff like Danny and Dusty, with Chris Kakavez, with Jack Watterson, like you mentioned, and other stuff. But out of all of the material that you've worked on, do you have one particular track that you're particularly fond of?
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot to choose from. Does anything stand out in your mind?
Well, a few of the solo things that I've done do stand out. The new album, believe it or not, is, maybe it's just because it's fresh in my memory, but I am very proud of that album. And I feel, you know, as part of the band and everything, I feel I'm very well represented and contribute to the sound of the album. Very much. I always liked the first Danny and Dusty album. That was, we did it literally over a weekend, and we just had a blast in a studio in Los Angeles that we were all familiar with. It was the same studio that we later recorded the demos to State of Our Union. That's on CD2 of that State of Our Union box set that just came out. So we were familiar with that studio, comfortable. We were all friends. There were new songs, and we knew them just well enough to record them well, which is very similar to this new album. It was the same thing. We hadn't played them to death and worked them to death live for a year and worked with them. I think we worked for 2 days on this new album, Psychedelic Country Soul. We worked in a rehearsal studio for a couple of days with Ed Stasian, but that was it. Besides that, we had enough time to learn them from the demos that we were electronically sending back and forth to one another. And then we hit the studio and went for it after we worked with Ed for those 2 days. So everything, again, was fresh. And that's the way I like to work. I don't like to massage a recording or a song over and over and over for years before we actually hit the studio, because it loses its meaning. Mm-hmm. You start thinking about this part or that part or things that don't necessarily relate to how you're going to put the song across, the recording across to the listener. That's the most important thing.
Right. Tom, we've got one last question for you. Okay. And it relates to the primary focus of our podcast, which is Paisley Underground. Now, the Long Riders are often associated with the scene, and we wanted to just pick your brain and ask you, if you wouldn't mind telling us, in your opinion, what the Paisley Underground scene was, and, you know, what bands were a part of the scene? Like, what was it being, you know, in this large group in LA where these new sounds were coming out of?
It's a scene that is most prevalent in the press at this point. Uh-huh. In the early 80s, I was a latecomer to the scene. I would not call, say, Points of View in 1982 a Paisley Underground record, even though later I joined the Long Riders. and went to the same barbecues, started meeting people in Green on Red and the Bangles, and started playing shows at the Rain Parade and these other bands that are 3 o'clock that are considered part of the Paisley Underground. It was a social scene. It had to do, as I said, with barbecues and playing at the same gigs, and sometimes they were not glamorous gigs. So we all had to hang on for dear life and do the best we could for the people that were in attendance. But that was all right, you know.
Yeah.
That was how the friendships were born. And those friendships, most of them anyway, do survive to this day, which is nice. So when, you know, it's not uncomfortable being associated with that scene for the vast majority of the people that are considered part of the Paisley Underground, because we all get along.
I like that. Oh, I love that.
See? I like hearing that reflection, because I think it really does encapsulate at least how we as fans envision that. So thank you for that.
Yes.
Jeff, any other questions that you have for Tom, since we've got him for a few more precious minutes?
No, Tom, I just wanted to ask if there's any last stories or anecdotes that you wanted to share about the new album, Psychedelic Country Soul. That's the main reason that we wanted you on to talk about that. And we slipped in a few extra things, which I appreciate you staying for and answering. But yeah. Is there any last thoughts that you wanted to say on the new album?
Yeah, the new album, doing that new album, just, I mentioned this before, it was like this happy bubble that we were in. The studio was incredibly comfortable. I had a nice little kitchenette with a Keurig coffee machine and a sink and everything. In fact, I remember I was putting cream in my coffee, and I heard somebody's doing dishes next to me. I look, and there's Dr. Dre. It's like, hey, Dre, nice place here.
Keurig coffee is not the first thing that pops to mind when I think of the chronic master, Dr. Dre. But
there you go.
Let alone, yeah, it is just, it was a wonderful experience that just happened. Opportunity presented itself, and we conspired together and got it accomplished.
Yes, and it's a great accomplishment. We love the album, and we did want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today. We're looking forward to seeing the band on tour, hopefully in the U.S. Hopefully I'll have a chance to meet up with you guys in Italy. And we just wanted to wish you guys a great tour and great success. The press has been great on this new album. And again, we just want to thank you for taking time, Tom, to speak with us today.
It's been a thrill.
And yes, and thank you for letting me be a part of the podcast. Again, I really enjoy it.
Thank you so much. And once again, to all our listeners, Tom Stevens, go get Psychedelic Country Soul. You need this.
You do.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Tom. We really appreciate
it. Thanks again, Tom. Have a good one.
Okay. You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Could there be a nicer guy around?
There, you know what? It seems like most of these people that we speak with in the scene that came out of LA during the early 80s are just exceptional people. And Tom is definitely a good example of that.
You know what I like about Tom? And I mean, Tom's got fantastic stories.
Oh, yes.
But every single song, every single project, it's really heartfelt, and there's so much detail put into all of these and his songs, along with his solo projects. And I'm so glad that we can still get his solo stuff. You know, tomstevens.org, write him an email at tom@tomstevens.org. But I just really like hearing all the detail and all the thought goes into these projects. And just to underline it, I really enjoy hearing the joy in his voice, because we also heard it in Greg Souter's voice.
Absolutely.
of how much they really enjoyed recording this album. And I think, you know, their joy translates to how it's being received, and it's getting wonderful reception.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good point. It that joy really does come through in the songs.
What did he call it? He said we were in a happy bubble.
Happy bubble.
How many bands say that? You know, we were in a happy bubble recording this album.
Nice.
I just think it's a poignant observation. What a thrill having him on.
Yes.
It was really nice.
Yes, I totally agree.
I hope it's not the last time.
I hope you're right about that. I hope so. I hope not, rather. Well, next week on our podcast, we talk with members of the Dream Syndicate about the Medicine Show album, and that wraps up our album focus series. So we'll be doing that next week. We've actually already talked to them, so we'll get that put together. And that will be the episode that we release after the Tom Stevens episode. So that was a fun one, too.
Oh, that was, you guys are really going to enjoy it.
Yes. All right, Soraya.
All right, my friend. So, gente, agrubiar.
Groove on, Paisley people. It's too much of that Keurig coffee.
This is a song of Tom Stevens called A Stitch in Time.
Time is fine.
But I don't understand what to do.